In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit. This is episode 22, Eddie Muller's short story, Last Call. You can find more information about Eddie at eddiemuller.com.
This is Eddie Muller. I am going to read from an anthology called Meeting Across the River, which was a collection of stories all inspired by the song Meeting Across the River by Bruce Springsteen, and everybody that contributed did their take on what that song was actually about. And this was my contribution entitled Last Call. So it went good, right? Just like you figured. Eddie doesn't glance over when he talks. He just stares straight ahead at the lights on Canal Street and aims the Cadillac towards the tunnel, getting us the hell out of Manhattan and back to Bayonne. He's got that faraway look on his busted-up mug, same one he wore in the dressing room before a fight. It makes him look like a moron, as if there's only one tiny thought trapped in there, knocking around like a moth. Thinking has never been Eddie's specialty. Yeah, it went fine, Eddie. Piece of cake, with plenty of icing. The icing, all $5,000, is in a valise between my feet. Tight, wrapped stacks, crisp and fresh, my ticket out of Jersey and into the life. After sniffing everybody's ass all these years, things are finally breaking right. I can't wait to see Cherry's face when I drop all this cash on her. She'll go nuts. Eddie, you were great. I'm reassuring him, like always. Thanks for backing me up and letting us use the car. I always make sure to say us, so he'll feel like he's part of the plan. Eddie turns and smiles, probably because I mentioned the car. Land yacht, with a two-tone custom paint job, white walls, long as a fucking float in the St. Paddy's Day parade. This caddy means everything to Eddie. Literally, it's all he's got left to show from a once-promising middleweight career. Thanks to the car, people remember him wherever he goes. The Bayonne Bruiser, 18-5-1 on the final ledger. He could handle himself in there till he had to think. Big money was not in the cards. You could see that. I could, anyway. That's why I told him to take Carbo's deal and tank the Bellini fight. The boys all got well on that one, and Eddie ended up making more than if he'd won, legit. Not that he would have gone in the bag without my coaxing. Not that I got any fucking credit or a decent taste of Eddie's payday. Pay off, you should say, if you want to be straight about it. I squeezed the valise between my ankles, feeling the firmness of all that bricked-up cash. I always told you, Eddie, winning and losing, it's a day-to-day thing. Coming out ahead in the long run, that's what matters. And we are now on our way. Them guineas like my car. Jesus Christ, it's pathetic enough to break your heart. This past year he's really gone downhill, gotten sullen, slower, dragging ass when he used to bounce. The punches are finally catching up, I guess. He was lucky to survive the pasting that flashy filly spade laid on him. Once again, who was there to give him the good advice? Quit. When the Goombas wanted to rake in a few more bucks off the local hero. All right, admit it, Rooney Higgins. You are no saint. You're not above using the poor schmuck yourself. You knew the Cadillac and Eddie down Spring Street would divert attention and let you handle your business in private. Everybody wanted to see the Bayonne Bruiser and the legendary limo Carbo gave him for letting Mario Bellini knock him out. And Eddie, he's so busy getting his back slapped, he don't even see the deal go down or even bother to ask. We'll book $2,000, I told him going in. You take $500, just for driving, just for being good old Eddie, just for being the kind of pal who doesn't ask for a count. I don't look at it like I'm screwing him. 5 fucking years I've scratched to get those greaseballs working with me, bringing them all kinds of sweet deals, offering to handle the heavy work, always eating their shit with a smile, letting them treat me like some mutt scrounging at the curb for a scrap. But it's different now. Soon as Cherry sees this dough, she'll take back every miserable word she said about me. She'll forget it all. She'll never run me down again. Because this time, I pulled it off. Exactly like I planned. Better. Let's celebrate, Rooney. Buy me a drink. Nick's genius. I'm carrying a shitload of cash here. Let's get back home, then we'll divvy up. Hey, what are you worrying for? You're with me, remember? Just a quick one before we hit the tunnel. Not a good idea. How about once we get across? We don't know no bars around here. There's a place right ahead, they know me. It's always on the house. Jesus, you've been in them all, haven't you? That's a cheap thing to say, but if Eddie's offended, it doesn't show. He gives me more of that thick, lopsided grin. One pop, that's all. Call Cherry, tell her how great it went. Listen, I know better than to get between Eddie and a drink. Truth is, it wasn't those last two bouts that finished his career. It was the booze and the glad-handers and the lure of one bar after another where everybody's excited to see you and they buy you all the drinks you can handle. Eddie thought he could handle them all. Being a square guy, he bought regular rounds for the house. Then the house next door, then the one across the street. Pretty soon he was doing road work hungover, when he did road work. After a while, only his elbow was getting the workout, and I had to watch him drink down the dough and piss it all away. I figure it's already 12:30 when we fit the caddy into a space in front of a dive called Malachy's. Crummy neighborhood, at least it's Irish. You still got that piece I gave you? I ask Eddie. He rubs the bristly red stubble on his head and shrugs, the silly grin creeping back on his face. Never had it, Room. I left it home. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, it was for your protection. Didn't feel right, you know, me carrying a gun. I ain't about to kill nobody. Besides, everything went down smooth, like you said. Climbing out of the car, Eddie studies its half acre of hood, reflection of the tavern's neon sign squiggling all over the metal. He stops to run the sleeve of his leather jacket along a fender. One of those goons got something on here, leaning on my machine like they owned it. In the wash of neon, Eddie seems pretty beat, not nearly as eager as he usually looks striding into a barroom. He shoots a glance at the valise. You want me to hold that for your own protection? Hey, I'm a big boy. Let's go. One and done. It's a fight bar, of course. Pictures of pugs all over the walls. The bartender sees Eddie and lets loose with the familiar shout, Hey, champ! The handful of customers roused themselves from the ant races to pump the champ's mitt. After he won the Jersey State middleweight belt, I took to calling Eddie champ, but he finally told me to put a sock in it. You ain't the champ till you win a world title. That was back when Eddie had a future. Nowadays, he eats up being called champ, the way a scrawny dog eats its supper from the trash. Before we settle in, Eddie drags me over toward a pinball machine in the corner so he can point out his picture hanging there. That was my first publicity picture, wasn't it? I remember the guy coming to the gym to take it. He thought he was kind of a fruit, remember? Yeah, I remember. Who the hell paid for it, Eddie? Remember? Not Egan, your imbecile of a manager. I lent that brainless prick every idea he ever had. Would it have killed you, Eddie, to say, Thanks, Rune, one fucking time in all those years. What'll it be, gents? The runt behind the bar flips his bar rag over his shoulder with a puffed-up flourish and throws Eddie a manly shake. He looks like every ruddy-faced patty towel swinger I ever seen. Bucket boys turned bartenders. Eddie must know hundreds of these guys throughout North Jersey in all 5 boroughs, ready to pour a free one when he struts through the tavern doors. Connect the dots. Free drink to free drink. Is that all you need, Eddie? Your face on the wall and drinks on the house? When you hit bottom, let's see if any of them come running to pick you up. Because that day's coming fast, old pal. And Rooney won't be there anymore to wipe your ass. When you're shuffling around in your bathrobe, sparring with the shadows, me and Cherry are going to own 10 places classier than this dump. West Side, Midtown, far the fuck away from here. You must be Rooney. Eddie talks about you all the time. Feel like I already know you. Yeah, well, give him whatever he wants, Mal. Bourbon for me. In the mirror behind the bar, I watch Eddie shoot his cuffs and climb onto the stool. I try to find something in his face that reminds me of the guy who crouched in his corner at St. Nick's in the Hippodrome, unafraid of those mean-looking jigs across the ring. But there's nothing left in Eddie that I recognize. Any good is long gone. You've had the radish, partner, and you're not taking me down with you. Give me a Rheingold, I tell the barkeep. And you got a payphone? Yeah, it's in the back. You can't miss it. I turn to Eddie. I'm going to tap a kidney and give Cherry a call. Let her know everything went okay. I can hold that if you want, he says, tapping the valise. He's awful interested in the bag all of a sudden, which I do not appreciate. No, I got it, champ. Don't worry yourself. Drink up. I scoped the clientele as soon as we walked in. Nobody with the stones to juke me up, even if I wasn't with Eddie. I take the valise to the back and slip into the tiny men's room and lock the door with the slide bolt. Smells of piss and disinfectant are fighting it out in the cramped space. I'm surprised how my heart starts racing. It's the first time since we got off Spring Street that Eddie hasn't been right next to me. Shit. My whole life he's been right next to me, crowding me. Maybe I'm just getting excited about how in a few hours that hump will be out of my hair for good. I peel off my coat and shirt and drape them over the toilet. I'm wearing a vest underneath, one Cherry made special. I left the zippers open so I can do this fast. I count out $3,000 from the valise, stash it evenly in the pockets in the vest lining, and zip it back up, in case Eddie wants to watch me count the take when we get back to my place. Not a chance, but you can't be too careful. Putting the shirt and coat back on, I check myself in the filthy mirror above the sink. Yeah, there's something different about me all of a sudden, that's obvious. What I can't tell is if it's really there in my face and in my eyes, or if it's only in my head. Tonight, man, it was like I knew it always could be. Sweet and easy, getting respect like I always deserved. Finally, I've crossed over to someplace new. Crossed over as quick and clean and smooth as we slipped under the river. In the hallway, beneath a string of permanent Christmas lights, I dial up Cherry. When we were first going out, she used to answer the phone with this sexy, husky voice, laying it on extra thick for me. Every goddamn time I saw a payphone, I'd call her just to hear her say my name. Christ, she was a looker. And those shitheels from the neighborhood couldn't stand seeing her on my arm. Even after we were hitched, I never got tired of looking at her. She's got her moods, no question. But when I'd bitch and moan endlessly about never getting a break, she'd whisper to me in the middle of the night, "Baby, you're a world beater," or "Your time will come, Rooney Higgins." I'll always remember that. She stuck it out, that woman. Through the worst, through all my big schemes and broken promises. Be our 5th anniversary next month. Now we'll do it in style, like I told her. She's been drifting away from me lately, I can tell. But tonight changes everything. Looking around the corner, I see Eddie and the bartender hunched over the plank in deep conversation. Well, deep as it can go with Eddie. Cherry doesn't answer after 5 rings, which pisses me off. I told her to wait by the phone, that I'd call the first chance I got. Everybody else in the bar is taken off. The clock shows it's almost 1 bar time, but later than I thought. Shit. 10 rings now. Wait by the phone. Goddamn bitch never listens to what I tell her. Eddie swivels and hoists his drink, giving me a little toast. There's that stupid smile again, the one I'll never have to see after we get back to Bayonne. Something bumps me hard in the neck, and I... I've seen plenty of ugly shit in my day, but I nearly gag when I see Rooney's brains blow out his forehead. From behind the rail, Mal yells, "Jesus H. Christ!" More annoyed than shocked. Pieces of Rooney's head have splattered high above the bar on somebody else's pictures. I'm going to be cleaning all fucking night now, Mal gripes, slapping his rag down on the plank. He flips a bunch of switches, killing the overheads and the neon. He leaves on the Christmas lights so we can see our way around, and he starts collecting bar towels. I hop off the stool and hustle to the back. Stepping over Rooney, I try not to look at his head, but I can't help it. It's like a big red sponge with a chunk missing in a pool of blood. Cherry's standing stone still, little puffs of gun smoke floating around her in the colored lights. I tug the pistol out of her hand and stuff it in my jacket. When I hold her, she's shaking inside, like the way you do before a big fight. Scared, but excited. It's over. It's okay. It's over, I say. Are you sure he's dead? She asks in that husky voice of hers. Mal chuckles and throws down towels to soak up the mess. He gives Rooney a kick. Hey, Squire, last call. How about one for the road? Quickly, he snatches the satchel up before it gets blood on it. I'd say Mr. Rooney Higgins has officially shuffled off this mortal coil. Mal tosses me the bag. There's more on him, Cherry says, gazing down at her late husband. He's hiding the rest of it in a vest he had me make special. I hand the bag to Cherry and hunker over Rooney, trying not to toss my cookies as I grab fistfuls of his coat and turn him over. His eyes are open, one bulging out of the socket like it don't fit right no more. Behind me, Cherry groans, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, just keeps saying. I tear apart Rooney's shirt and have a hell of a time getting the vest undone. Mal does his best to keep the blood dammed up, building a mound of soaked towels all around Rooney's head. I don't want to look at his face, but as it is with me, I can't resist. And though I know he ain't hearing me, there's things I need to tell Rooney in case he ain't made it to wherever yet. You still looking down your nose at me, huh, Roon? Surprised? How long do you think we could all stand it? Smart little man and all his big plans. I yank money from the pocket sewn into the vest and I hand it back to Cherry. Smart little man who beats on his wife every time his big plans fall through. Smart little man keeps pissing people off till they want him dead. My voice comes back to me different, like somebody else's. That was you, Rooney. So fucking full of yourself you could never see how sick of your act everybody was. So tell me, Rune, who's stupid now, huh? Who's the stupid one now? Something wet drips onto my hands. I'm digging out the last of the cash, and I'm crying for fuck's sake. I swipe at my cheeks real fast, hoping that Mal won't see. I sit back on my haunches, holding the wrapped dough loose in my fists. Christmas lights are floating all over the place. Same as that night Bellini needed those extra punches to put me down. I sat there like I'm sitting now, because I wouldn't go out flat. No fucking way. Not for Carbo, not for Rooney, not for nobody. And slowly, things stop spinning and the rushing noise in my head starts to fade. It's always like that after you get your bell rung good. But it only takes a minute until you're squared away and ready to go again. This time, I hear a buzzing sound, off and on, off and on, off and on. I shake my head, but it won't go away. And then I realize it's the phone, dangling on the cord a few feet away, still ringing. Something about that sound pulls everything out of me, and I mean everything. I try to plant my feet under me, but this empty feeling makes my legs give way. I fall on my knees in a way I never did in the ring. My face falls against Sherry's legs. You're not home, I say over and over. And then I start laughing so they won't get the idea that I'm all broken up. And Cherry strokes my hair and says, come on, champ, get up. It's not over yet. Well, I've always been a finisher, so I stow my mud quick. While me and Mal get Rooney and all the bloody towels into a tarp, Jerry goes out to clear a place in the trunk. When we first worked all this out, the plan was to leave the body here so it'd look like a robbery or a bar beef gone bad. Nobody but me liked that idea. Cherry said she wouldn't be able to act sad enough when the cops came around, and the mob guys didn't want bad publicity for one of their joints, so they told me about a place in Jersey to dump the body, but that I gotta do the dumping myself. While Cherry's outside, Mal pulls something from under his apron. It's an envelope. Here's the other five. They told me to tell you thanks for curing the pain in our ass. There's a bonus grand, too, for giving up Rooney's source. Well, I stuffed the envelope in my jacket in there with a gun. They're the only things about me right now carrying any weight. Me and Mal bend down, ready to drag the body. Let's carry him. I don't want to have to scrub the whole floor. It's so quiet, I hear Jerry outside popping open the caddy's trunk. As we struggle across the dark barroom, Mal gives me a look I can barely make out. Does she know about the other $5,000? I don't say nothing, because the money part is none of Mal's business, but like always, I can't resist. I did it for her. She's a good woman. She deserves a break. You can use some money yourself, champ. Don't let her play you for a sap. Then the door opens, and Cherry's waiting there, biting her lip, her curls shining with all the different colors of the Christmas lights. Behind her on the wall in the shadows is a portrait of me, an up-and-coming world beater. I wish she'd knew me back then, back when I was something. I hold the caddy steady under the limit, heading towards the marshlands. Cherry's next to me, both of us not talking, just staring out at the open road and all that night rushing past. Sick of feeling the gun against me, I stash it in the glove box. Since we got in the car, I've been wondering how this was going to finish, the way we'd say goodbye. I try to think, you know, of words that could explain how I feel about her, how I've always felt about her, but that kind of stuff, it never comes easy to me. So I decided to pull out the envelope and hand it over. Put that in with the rest of it. It's another $6,000. Cherry looks at me like she believes in something again. Makes me feel great, I'm not going to lie. I want it so bad. I have for so long, it's like some kind of miracle that I've been able to resist. She is the only temptation I have resisted. Maybe because I screwed up everything else in my life. I need to believe in one perfect thing. Looking at her face in the dashboard light, I know I make Cherry out to be way more special than she is. But I want her to be untouchable, unbeatable, like she used to be, like I used to be. I don't want her down there in the same shithole with the rest of us. After all the crap she took off Rooney, she has a right to be untouchable, even from me. That should set you up pretty good, I managed to say. Far away from here. And all she has to do is look me in the eyes and say, you want to come along? Maybe I'd be the man I never was. But she keeps staring through the windshield, staring hard at some future I won't know nothing about. And that's when I see the flashing lights in the rear view. No siren, just the light spinning. I pull to the side of the road, and Cherry takes a long look through the back window and then over at me. And she's scared as anybody's ever been. Just stay cool. You don't have to say anything. That's exactly what Rooney told me for the 100th time when we turned onto Spring Street hours ago. The roller sits in the shadows, dust from the shoulder drifting up around it. The roof light keeps whipping around, painting the whole road red. Without looking over, I set my hand on Cherry's leg and give it a squeeze. The weight, it's worse than anything in any dressing room before any fight ever. Finally, the trooper climbs out and walks toward us real slow. I watch him coming in the side mirror trying to pray, but not remembering how. Cherry remembers. She's muttering a string of Hail Marys under her breath. I roll down the window and notice right off that the trooper's sidearm's still strapped in, which is a good sign. He's holding a clipboard and a pen. I look up to his face, and I'll be damned if he's not smiling at me. It's a look I've seen hundreds of times on hundreds of different faces. It's the look they all get right before they say, "Hey, champ, how about an autograph?" I'm about to laugh, but it never gets out. The gun is inches from my head when Cherry opens fire. Two shots burst the cop's chest, putting him down. My ears scream and my eyes catch fire. And she's still pulling the trigger, going crazy as I try to grab...
New Jersey Highway Patrolman Joseph Roberts, 42, was killed last night in a bizarre incident on Interstate 95 north of Newark. Roberts was shot twice in the chest during a routine stop of a vehicle belonging to former middleweight boxer Eddie Higgins. Higgins, 36, was found by police staggering along the road several hundred yards from the scene. Reports indicate that the one-time professional fighter had been blinded, apparently by a gunshot wound. An empty .38 caliber revolver discovered several miles away near the highway exit is believed to be the weapon that killed Officer Roberts and wounded Higgins, investigators say. Further inspection of the crime scene uncovered a body in the trunk of the abandoned vehicle, a 1957 Cadillac registered to Edward Sean Higgins. The deceased was later identified as James Rooney Higgins, the boxer's older brother. The elder Higgins had suffered a fatal gunshot wound to the head. Authorities have yet to determine if the same gun was used in all the shootings. According to sources at Newark General Hospital, where Eddie Higgins was rushed in police custody, the boxer confessed to both killings, although he has not been formally charged with either. Newark Police Sergeant Clyde Calloway reported that they have reason to believe there is another individual connected to this incident, and said, "We are confident that very soon we will have him in custody." Ted Glickman, KCYR.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave. Get trusted.